This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.
Hello, I'm Glenn Pugh for avweb.com. For some aviation enthusiasts, certain aircraft are iconic. Sometimes it's for the flash of power and maneuverability or high performance they produce, or even a moment in history. From that perspective, there are more than a few favorites, and the collection changes from generation to generation. But there are some aircraft that outlast a generation and earn a special place in aviation history. We're speaking today with Major David Donatelli of the United States Air Force. The Major is an electronic warfare officer and the project officer for a campaign called The Year of the B-52. Major, thank you for your service and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, sir.
Now, I'd like to first give recognition to the unit you're serving in and the base at which you're stationed. Please make the introductions for us to our audience.
Yes, sir. I serve in the Commander's Action Group for Air Force Global Strike Command headquarters here at Barksdale Air Force Base, Louisiana.
And now let's get right into it. The stage is yours. What is the Year of the B-52?
The Year of the B-52 is basically the command is leading an effort to honor the heritage and recognize the accomplishments of the B-52 and the people, past, present, and future, who develop, acquire, operate, maintain, and secure the weapon system.
The first aircraft, I understand, rolled out in 1951. I think the first flight may have been the year after. I've seen reports that the Air Force and General Accounting Office once predicted B-52s will serve through the year 2040, which would be quite a service, almost 100 years. Now, I've got a long list of landmarks here, and it appears there may be campaigns yet to come, but could you touch on some of the major milestones this aircraft has had over the past six decades that we're recognizing this year and year of the B-52?
Yes, sir. The B-52 has actually served in every combat operation since Vietnam. Its first flight for the Y-B-52 was in April 15th of 1952, and that was 60 years ago. One of the big landmarks that we're actually celebrating this year is the last production B-52 left Boeing and was delivered to Minot Air Force Base in October of 1962. So that was 50 years ago. So the youngest B-52H is 50 years old. And coming up here shortly in May, it'll be 40 years since Linebacker, and then in December it'll be 40 years since Linebacker 2. Quite a storied career for the B-52.
And as the decades have passed, it's not as if this aircraft has sort of fallen into the back section of the repertoire. This thing is flying frontline missions, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Let me stop. We may have gotten a little bit of ahead of ourselves. For those people who aren't immediately familiar, quickly talk about the aircraft itself. How many engines are we carrying? What's the payload? What's the range? How many as crew?
Well, the B-52 has eight Pratt & Whitney engines. One interesting note is it's actually wider than it is long. Its wingspan is 185 feet, and its length is 159 feet. The payload's approximately 70,000 pounds, and the unrefueled range is about 8,800 miles. She goes about 0.8 Mach is its speed that we roll at.
And how many people is it carrying on board most often?
There's two pilots, two navigator and a radar navigator, and then an electronic warfare officer.
What sort of modifications has the aircraft seen over the years?
Well, the jet's actually seen a whole host of modifications back from the Y-B-52 to the current H model. So we've actually changed out the engines. We've improved the avionics. We've actually improved the electronic warfare suite. Along of a whole host of improvements to the radios and things of this nature. But she still has the same steam gauges for like the engines and whatnot that they originally came off the production line with.
So is it the ability of the aircraft to adapt, or is it the mission itself and the need for the mission that makes the aircraft so enduring?
I think it's both. I think it's the ability for the aircraft to be modernized and adapted in the actual mission that it serves for nuclear deterrence and combat or in conventional operations. Another portion, too, is the aviators that fly the aircraft are able to adapt to different situations. The training they receive, both with the weapon system and with our joint partners, allows the aircraft to continue to be relevant in today's fight.
Following along that line about the pilots, how about getting us inside? What's it like operationally to be part of a B-52 crew? Put us in there with you. What's it like?
One of the things that when you give a tour of the B-52 that most people don't realize is that it's such a large aircraft, and when you actually go inside, it's very cramped in the actual cockpit, because most of the aircraft is turned over to both fuel and weapons. One other thing of note, too, is while you're flying, it's actually more arid than the desert. So the crew actually has to make sure that they're consuming enough water to operate the aircraft effectively. And the missions themselves, if it's a long-duration mission, it is. It's I wouldn't say boredom, but routine tasks that you have to accomplish, followed by either the bomb run or releasing cruise missiles or something along those lines. But it's actually a lot smaller inside than most people think, and it's certainly not as comfortable as a airline seat sitting in our ejection seats. The two pilots sit forward where you see the windows. The electronic warfare officer sits some distance behind on the top deck facing aft, and then the radar navigator and the navigator are on the bottom deck, sort of underneath the pilots, right behind the radar. So we're separated from each other, and when they built the aircraft, they actually tried to think of crew comfort. So there's actually a bunk for long-duration sorties you can sleep on. You can actually stand up in the second in the hatch. So you can stand next to the radar navigator and the navigator, and you can actually stand to your full height, as you're going up to the top deck. So, it allows you to stretch out, where some of our fighter brethren, if they do a long-duration sortie, they're just stuck in their seat. They can't actually get around. So that's actually a creature comfort that we enjoy.
And looking around inside, are we talking about big panels full of switches and knobs, or have we moved to glass panel displays? Is it a mix?
It's a mix, sir. It's mostly, like I said, they still have the steam gauges for the engine instruments, but there are some MFDs, some multifunctional displays and whatnot that are there. But it's the same yoke. So there's switches and knobs and whatnot all over the aircraft, along with the circuit breakers and whatnot. I think personally, when I walk by a commercial jet and you look inside the cockpit, it looks remarkably similar.
Now,
without the fancy glass cockpit.
What's the performance like in this aircraft?
One thing of note for the jet is it has spoilers. It doesn't have ailerons, so there is there's a little bit of a delay as you maneuver the aircraft. So it's a one potato, two potato before the aircraft starts to turn. So that's a little bit different than most people are aware of. But otherwise than that, I would say it's not a slow non-maneuvering target. So she can actually do a couple of interesting maneuvers.
Well, let's look forward. I've heard the rumors that it might be in service up through 2040. How does that sound to you? Does it look like it will make it? And in your opinion, could you imagine how it might be serving, what functions it might, what roles it might serve in the decades to come?
Absolutely. I think it can last until 2040. I think that there is a large move afoot, both in this command and the Air Force, to modernize the aircraft to keep it viable to the 2040s. I think it'll be still doing the same mission, so nuclear deterrence and then conventional operations, both close air support, cruise missiles, so strategic attack, the same mission set that it's in now in the future as they attempt to modernize it and keep it relevant.
Oh, finally, how about key dates coming up in the near future? What's the best chance for a civilian to get face-to-face with one of these and maybe climb aboard? Are there any events in the year of the B-52 particularly that you'd like to promote?
In June, up in Omaha, they're actually having the SAC reunion. And then here at Barksdale in October, we're going to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the last B-52 coming off the production line and being delivered to Minot. The plans actually are still kind of in formulation for that. And then in November, we're actually having Air Force Global Strike Challenge, which is a reincarnation of the old SAC bomb comp that's in November.
We've been speaking with Major David Donatelli, Project Officer for the Year of the B-52 campaign. To all those who do serve now or have served, thank you. I'm Glenn Pugh for AvWeb.com. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.